You're listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hochkaiser-Ilkovich. As listeners of this podcast know, we often have the exciting opportunity to present recordings of New York Wiki live events as special episodes of our show. This episode features one of those events, which is a conversation between Jamie Heller, business editor at The Wall Street Journal, and Annie Minoff, senior producer at the Journal podcast. You'll hear Dusty Jenkins, global head of public affairs at Spotify and former president of New York Women in Communications, moderating the conversation. This is a really special chat about the evolution of traditional media. Jamie and Annie candidly discuss their careers, how the news continues to change with new technology, how the pandemic has affected business reporting, and they give a behind-the-paywall look at how they source and produce the news. As we all watch traditional journalism grow and change, this is a conversation you won't want to miss. New York Wiki has a ton of amazing events like this. For more information on upcoming events and how to attend one, visit nywici.org. That's nywiki.org. Please note that this event was recorded in October 2022. In this episode, Dusty mentions that there are more than 4 million podcasts on Spotify. That is a lot. A lot of podcasts. After hearing that fact, I am even more grateful for all of you who tune in and listen to our podcast. We'd love for you to continue to support us by subscribing as well as rating and reviewing the show on your favorite podcast platforms. It really does help when you do this, so thank you so much. Enjoy this episode, and thank you for listening.
Hello. Okay, we're going to go ahead and get started. How nice is it to be in person? It's so good to see you all. Thank you so much for coming out this evening, and I'm so excited to be joined by two incredible women in our industry, both from the Wall Street Journal, and so we are going to get into storytelling and news media and how the dynamics has changed. But I want to start by introducing them. So Jamie, do you mind for the audience just telling us a little bit about your background? I have to tell you, I'm a huge fan of Jamie's. I actually was introduced to her at an event and had to play it cool and act like I didn't know everything about her and what she had written and the fact that she has covered all of the major company stories that you've heard about in the last several years. So Jamie, we're so happy to have you. And then we'll have Annie introduce herself as well.
Well, that's awfully generous of you. And thank you all so much for being here. It's been really nice to get to know some of you already. I have been at the Journal 20 years this year, which has been really exciting for me. I came to the online journal when it was a separate division and really wanted to be like at the flagship, really worked my way over there. And at a certain point, we all merged, and now we're one organization. I've had a number of different jobs. I covered finance for about 9 years, which includes like stocks up and down and deals. And then I've been in this job, which is companies. Like I cover Exxon, Walmart, Facebook, Spotify for about 5 years. And I would say, I mean, it's been like the dream job of my life, but covering the pandemic was an incredibly dramatic experience. And I hope to be here another 20 years. It's just such a great organization for journalists.
And then we also have with us Annie Minoff. I want to mention that Annie is with the Gimlet side of the house. So Gimlet is a co-produced podcast with the Wall Street Journal, Gimlet, and Spotify. So we're very happy to be a part of the storytelling arm there. How many here have listened to the Journal podcast? Raise your hand. If not, I'd be happy to recruit you to listen. It's really good. Annie, could you share a little bit about your background?
Sure. Hello, I'm Annie. And I have been working at the Journal for about 3 years. Originally came out of public radio, so I've been podcasting for about 11 years, which is almost, I think, as long as podcasting has been a verb. I work at the Journal, which is a daily news show. We go in depth on one news story for about 15 minutes every day, drawing on the amazing work that our colleagues do in the Wall Street Journal newsroom with Jamie. I am also a big Jamie fan. And we put that out every single day. And let's see, that might be it for me right now.
So I'd love to just open up with getting into the Journal. And so the Journal is one of the publications that I read every single day. I actually still get the print copy, Jamie, you'll be glad to know, delivered to my house. I try to listen to the podcast almost every day as well. And so I'm just curious, when you think about news out there, and many people in the audience today are in the news storytelling business in one way or the other, what is the Journal's approach? What do you do to sort of differentiate yourself? Because we all know there are lots of different ways that you can get information today. What do you think sort of sets the Journal apart?
Two things. We look at the world through a lens of money, business, economics, and finance. And so some of us actually cover those subjects, and that's like our main responsibility. But let's say we're covering sports, or we're covering a hurricane, or we're covering the midterm elections. We are going to be savvy about business and finance in everything we do. And that's imbues everything. It's part of our worldview that money is a huge driver of human nature. Money is a huge reason why things happen in the world. And as a coverage that doesn't acknowledge that and see that is potentially just not very good coverage. So we just try to be very, very smart about finances in everything we write. And because of that, the institutional muscle on all things financial is really incredible at the Journal. Like, people could like joke around about preferred shareholders or like CLOs and, you know, CDS, and people know what they're talking about zero-based budgeting, and you're just always pushing each other and pushing ourselves, and when something comes up, we just feel like we know what to do. And so that's one thing that other publications, there are plenty of other publications that do business, but not really to like with the same focus and fervor that we do it. And then we're just very, very committed to objective, fact-based, unagendaed reporting. That is definitely something more up for debate now in journalism. I don't know how many of you guys, if at all, were at the reporters' committee dinner last week, where it was like Judy Woodruff of the PBS NewsHour got an award. And
she's getting one at the Matrix Award coming up really soon. Nice. Judy is worth honoring in lots of different ways, I would say.
It was really fascinating to me because she talked about the importance of fact-based, unbiased reporting. And then a couple of other people who got awards were very open of like, journalism is a great tool for social justice and for like propelling what's important to our political agenda. And those are two different models. And there's like a third category, I would say, is people who like try to, you know, are ostensibly objective but are actually agendaed. So I think the best two models are either our model, where we are like truly in every way committed to objective, unagendaed journalism, or just be really open that you have an agenda in your journalism, and that's like another model, but that's not our model. So I believe that people who really want that know that they get that at the Journal, and it's really not easy. Like, I will tell you, it's like, it's a really amazing place to work because it's incredibly professional and it's incredibly results oriented, and it's not about like who you know or who likes you, but it's a challenging place to work in that the standards are so high that like, every single piece of journalism we do just like gets pounded, edited and just like, I know you didn't mean it, but it sounds like we're biased here and we've got to change that. And did we really check that? And is it $4.99 or is it $5? Because if it's $5, we can't say it's $4.99. I mean, we like, it's very intense editing. And I think that does, in the end, make it the brand that it is.
And I'd love to understand your perspective on the podcast, because I would assume that you have that same high bar when it comes to what you're going to make a podcast about. I would also mention there are 4 million podcasts on Spotify, for those that don't know, 4 million and counting. And so there's a lot of content out there. And so how do you ensure that the Journal is a compelling piece that everyone, anyone who's interested in the topic wants to listen to sort of day in and day out?
Well, everything that Jamie talked about, like, that's in our DNA too. So when you're just talking about the painting over the $4.99 or the $5, like, that is absolutely our podcast scripts as well. And I think that's really important, that people know that they can trust us. And also this lens of money, business, and power, it's a very powerful lens. And it's not one that I think other podcasts have the expertise or the wherewithal to take on. So I think for us, it's a big differentiator. It's a very, very powerful lens, and I think people come to us for that reason. I'll throw this out there too. We're a short podcast. We're 15 minutes. I think that is a great boon. People can kind of work us into their lives. I know I do. I listen to our show when I do the dishes after cooking. Yeah, so, and I'll say also, we are part of the Wall Street Journal that is not behind a paywall, and we are not Spotify exclusive. You can listen to us anywhere. And so I think it's important for us to be an ambassador for the kind of journalism that the Wall Street Journal does. And I think that's an important part of our role too.
So I want to talk to you each respectively about how you choose the content that you cover, because I find it so fascinating. Jamie, I want to start with you. As someone who is an avid reader of the paper, I know there are very few of us probably still out there who read the paper, but I like to get my hands dirty. I love seeing the layout and the format and where something lands on the page. I care if it's on the front, if there's a photo. Can you walk us through, give us a little insight into the front page and how you decide what stories go where, what it looks like, what the process is? Does it happen at midnight the night before? Does it happen, you know, early in the morning? We'd be very curious to get a window into it.
Sure. I actually wanted to share that, so I actually like brought a paper, and I'll give you guys like a little tour of the paper. But I mean, what is really kind of wonderful about the print edition is that it's like the old school way of thinking about journalism of what do the editors think that's important for me? Like, I'm going to the journal because I want their editorial curation, and I want to see what the journal is telling me that's important. And that's like a very challenged view in journalism right now, because we do track readership online, and so we could see like, oh, we might have thought this is interesting, but guess what? Nobody else does. And you know, our readers are telling us what they think are interesting, and of course we need to respect that and think about how to channel that. I mean, I'm a believer that the best, most valuable part of that data is if you think a story is important and it's not doing well, what did you do wrong? Like, maybe you need a different headline, maybe you need a different photo, maybe like, you know, the top of the story isn't communicating well what you thought is important, but still like let your judgment be the ultimate guide, because I feel like that is what people want from the journal, is our judgment. Whereas like in different other publications, or you know, different people have different attitudes of just like news judgment isn't really a thing anymore, and just like give the people what they want based on the traffic. And that's, I think, a pretty interesting tension in journalism right now. In terms of the front page, so we are at a point now where the print staff is a separate staff. I mean, they're on our team, we work with them all day, but it's like a buffet model, and we're like driving coverage all day, and we're putting stuff out literally 24 hours a day, as I'm sure you guys all know, on our website, on our phone, Snapchat, TikTok, our podcast, like so many different digital channels. But at the end of the day, at you know, 6 o'clock basically, like we snap off the print edition, and that can get updated throughout the night. And basically, what's really, I think, really amazing about this is how structured it is, and you might not really realize it, but we have basically 5 or 6 stories a day on the front. So 3 of them, usually 3 or 4, are what we call extras, like as in extra, extra, read all about it. Those are things that are happening that day, or just very newsy, that we're trying to either, like we had the exclusive, or maybe we didn't, but we're trying to do the best job we can. And so, and those, it's crazy. And I can't even say why, but those have a thicker font, okay?
Oh, wow.
So, and usually what we do on those is we try to have a mix. So I might have a story, like today we have a story about Netflix that I think is really good, that I think should be on the front, but it's not going to be in the front, even though I pushed for it on the front. Maybe they'll change their mind. But they want to have a mix. So like they wouldn't have like a Facebook story, add a Microsoft story, add a Netflix story, you know, and a Google story on the front on the same day. They will try to mix it up. We're not a trade. So we don't want to have all Wall Street, all tech, you know, on any one day. We mix it up. So today we have here is a Goldman story, this is a chip story, this is a foreign affairs story. Try to have like a politics story or a US news story. So that's the mix. Then this is called internally, it's called the leader, L-E-D-E-R. I don't know, really know what that means. That's what it's called. It has a thinner font. And it's usually about 2,000 words. It might be shorter, it might be longer, but that's generally how long it is. Why is it always the same? Because we can't like reconstruct the wheel every single day. We have a section it jumps to. It has a certain amount of space, so maybe we'll modify it, but it's pretty much that length every day, and that's usually a deep dive that we've usually been working on for a while. So this was about the metaverse.
Who knew that we need to be paying attention to font size? I'm so fascinated
this is little,
by this.
Like, I don't even know why they do it that way, but it is. And then this is called the A-head. You guys probably have heard of that, but that's like our story on the front. That's like, it's not so much funny, but it's like, it's supposed to be a little lighter, more like the lighter side of life, and just like an interesting, quirky, clever thing going on in the world. This one is about, I think, Japan trying to shake itself from salt. And it doesn't have to do with anything else necessarily. Sometimes it is newsy, like something will come up and we'll do a crash A-head on something in the news. But for the most part, they stand alone. And it's just a really great, like, I think it just speaks to the intelligence of our readers that, like, because, you know, humor is usually intelligent and smart and wit and just like a sort of like cool thing of the journal that's to the test of time. And this, of course, is like one of the original blogs. It's called the What's News column, where we sort of digest sort of what's in the news. I could go on and on, like foreign's here, politics is here, blah, blah, blah. But this is just the way we think about the front, and that a little bit ports over to how we think about the front page of our website, which is, we're never going to have all tech, or, you know, we always are going to try to have a mix for our readership. And sometimes, like, your story will get a better placement if it has a great photo, or, like, so it's, we're trying to give a full package.
That's helpful. Note to Spotify team, let's not break news on the same day as every other tech company, because then we're fighting for the front page. Annie, I'm curious on your side, with so much news in every single day of the journal, how do you decide what you're going to cover, where you're going to go deep on a topic, do a podcast? You know, we just mentioned the metaverse, and you've done this incredible series on the metaverse recently that I really encourage everyone to take a listen to. But would love to know, like, how you decide what topics you're going to cover.
There's this category that's like everyone's thinking and talking about this thing, and like there's no way that we're not going to cover it. So like war in Ukraine would fall in that bucket. Impeachment would fall in that bucket. Something we know we have to cover. And those are often the stories that we're turning around in a day. Then there's kind of everything else. And there we're looking for something that is meaty, that has action, that has characters. We're a narrative podcast. So every day, our intention, almost every day, is to tell a story. And so for that, we need characters, we need action, we need plot points, we need ideas. You can have a great story that's like all action, but if there's no idea, then it's not going to work. And then we're thinking about what's important for our listeners to understand the world, and what feels journally, like what falls in that money, business, power, those kind of buckets, what feels right for us. So that's the discussion that we're having every day at 9 a.m. during our editorial meeting is kind of, is there enough here kind of from a storytelling point of view? Do we feel like we can unspool a narrative with this? And maybe the answer is no, but it's so important that we figure out a way to do it anyway. We did an episode about the strong dollar. That's not like an especially narrative topic, but there are ways that we can do that in an engaging way in audio. So yeah, I think those are kind of the buckets, newsworthiness, importance, and then kind of the storytelling boxes that we need to check.
And I'd love to ask you both about the evolution of the media and the landscape overall. And so those in this room are sort of working on the front lines of that evolution in many different ways, whether it be on the ad side of the house or maybe they're communications or PR professionals working to pitch you stories. And we've seen how quickly the news moves. And so something might break in the morning, and by the afternoon, you're talking about something totally different. And you've now read about it on Twitter and maybe even seen a recap of the news. Now they're doing them on TikTok. And so tell us how you're thinking about that, how you're encouraging your journalists to keep up with that evolution, and how you ensure that fatigue doesn't set in, because that is really nonstop. It certainly feels that way being on the other side of consuming it.
I think sometimes fatigue does set in. It's our job to keep the excitement, meet our readers' excitement, and keep jazzed. We are trying to evolve with it. So for an example, about a year ago, we added a new desk internally called Speed and Trending, which is like another way for us to have people who could just jump on something that's either breaking or that's trending. So for an example, Friday, I think we like jumped on the story that someone had, those protesters had thrown tomato soup on that Van Gogh painting. Like, people wanted to read about that. It was interesting. We didn't bring anything proprietary to it, but we wanted to participate in the story. Other times, it's just like Elon Musk said something, and you know, our reporter isn't awake yet, but like this desk is going to do a quick hit. So we've actually had to bolster our resources to keep up, because speed is so important. And I've always been like all about the scoop, and I want the exclusive. And I haven't had, like a lot of my career, didn't have that high of an interest in being first on announced news, because I just felt that was more of like a technical race and not really an intellectual race. But we have had to adjust, because having a really strong story quickly affects how you rank in Google search. And like that's just like one example of how you just have to be sophisticated and savvy on how the tech platforms are going to pick you up and not be naive about that. So like being fast, being like authoritative quickly is just a really like ongoing mission of ours. And there's no like easy answers.
And Annie, on the podcast side, to your point, you've been in the space for some time. Gimlet were really pioneers for podcasting. Now podcasting is a household word. You hear people using it constantly. And as I said, there are more than 4 million podcasts on Spotify. How have you watched that space evolve? And what advice would you have to those in the audience who are thinking about starting a podcast, either for their company or their brand? Given that you're on the front lines of it, you're making them. We have some that we produce here at Spotify as a comms team, and I will tell you, listening to them is very easy. Making them is not as easy. And so I would love to hear your advice as well.
Yeah, there's a perception out there that just like, you know, you go into your closet and you record something and you can put it out there, and that is absolutely a podcast, and it, by that definition, anyone can do it. But I think because the barriers to entry are quite low, there's a perception that there isn't skill and time and money that goes into making something that sounds good and has the level of craft that I think we all as listeners can recognize when that's there and when it's not. I think people are starting to understand that. it's been kind of a slow evolution. I'll say too, there are so many wonderful independent podcasts out there that are only out there because people tried, and they had something to say, important to say. So I think the low barriers to entry, I experienced that myself. I got into this field because I worked in college radio, I think that's how a lot of us start. But I think it is a craft. It does take time. It does take expertise. And I think one of the great things about working at the Journal is we are also drawing not just from our expertise as podcasters at Gimlet, but from the expertise of our colleagues, the reporters, who are digging into stories and bringing us things that no one else has access to. And so our job is to, you know, add to that where we can. Often we're going out and finding additional voices to bring into our stories. But often it is working with them to give the amazing work that they've already done a platform and to make it work for audio. And that's one of the most kind of gratifying parts of my job is working with the people in the newsroom who are the true experts and bring us wonderful stories every day, so many that we have long conversations about which ones we're gonna cover because there's such an abundance, so.
Can I jump in on that?
Please. So there's like what I guess we would call creator content, which is a little bit what you're saying of like independent people who, and so that's I might be drawing a line that doesn't exist, but if you could put that in a bucket, then I personally feel just not as a, like, just as a user, in my observation, the New York Times Daily podcast was so good, and I think that set a bar that just like it's incredibly hard to do things that well. And so when we came on the scene, which was also a news podcast but with a different intellectual focus, I think we couldn't do it alone. It takes a massive amount of resources to do it really, really well. And I just feel the bar is set pretty high now for professionally produced podcasts.
I think that's right. And the amount of time that you spend, even if it's 15 minutes, it's 15 minutes you could be doing something else. And so that's the precious commodity. People are not willing to waste their time now. There's so much you can do all at once. I'd love to get into a big story of the last 12 months, Jamie, and one that you all broke, and that's the story of Frances Haugen. So this is the Facebook whistleblower. I'm sure you all read about it. The Journal broke this story. It was covered extensively on the podcast. And so I'm sure there's only so much you can disclose, but it would be really helpful to understand sort of the early parts of this story. And, you know, it dominated the headlines for days across many outlets. You broke it first. You covered it for several days. And then there was this really rich podcast. And so very curious about how you all decided to tell this story and, like, when you knew, like, that this was going to be a pretty big one.
So actually, I could talk about that, like, more than your average story because so much has come out about it. And I have a little personal chip on my shoulder because people always say, oh, she was a whistleblower. But the truth is that reporters work insanely hard and, you know, frankly, not necessarily what you guys want us to be doing to get people to talk about what's going on inside a company. No. Part of what you guys are doing is probably not to have that happen.
Yes, Jamie, right? This is true.
But that
when
is
the journal
what we...
reaches out to employees of Spotify and LinkedIn, it does not make me happy. But I get it.
We do our job. You guys do your job. But it's like it's honestly really hard. It's incredibly hard work. And we have a reporter, Jeff Horowitz, who had done some really, really important work on Facebook in India. He worked incredibly hard to try to find out what was going on inside of the company, and it seems someone just dumped. I mean, think of how much work, how many people didn't talk to him, how many efforts he tried to make before he made this connection and earned that person's trust, which it was big. And then when we started realizing what we were getting access to, that's when we realized we had not just your run-of-the-mill story, but a very special story that we spent a huge amount of time thinking of exactly how we were going to slice and dice it and report it. And you know, Jeff was the tip of the spear, but we created a reporting team of five or six reporters from all over the world who worked on it, many, many editors, and the podcast people got in on the front end. And
it was so secret, I didn't even know about it. Others of my colleagues who were involved for months before we learned anything about it. So
it was riveting storytelling on the audio side, and it felt like two slightly different approaches at the story. it felt like you got to go with the audio like pretty deep into sort of the reporting and how it unfolded. And the fact that it was multi-parts, I thought was also really fascinating.
I mean, that's, I think, really podcasting and video at their best, when it's not just like you're listening to a version of the tech story, but it's actually a different approach, new, different information. And I wasn't the main editor on it, but of course I was involved, and listening to the podcast, it was just like, wow, this is like totally different than when I'm reading the paper. Really, really complimentary. And honestly, I find that a lot with this coverage I'm directly involved with. Like, I was very involved with our coverage of Warner Brothers Discovery, for an example, and then like I'll go on a run and listen to my reporter on the podcast and learn like all new things, you know. So I think that's an exciting way to think about the podcast, is like definitely not just like an audio form of the text reporting, but its own independent like channel of reporting.
And so I want to open it up to questions from the audience. So if you have a question, please raise your hand and we'll bring you a mic so that everyone can hear you, because we're recording this to share it with the membership. But I want to ask you both a question about, you know, you're two incredible females in this industry. This organization is New York Women in Communication. It's all facets of communication, whether it be the journalism side of communication or the advertising side. And so when you look at what we've just talked about, you know, how quickly news is moving, how fast the stories are changing, it's a really exciting time to be in the space, but it takes a lot. I mean, all the women here, you know, are sacrificing their evening to come and learn from you. What advice do you have for women in this space or interested in getting into this space?
Into journalism or communications broadly?
Journalism would be really helpful. Journalism, yeah. Communications, any facet of it would be great to get your advice.
Obviously, I'm very passionate about journalism, and I like believe it's truly a public service, and like I truly believe in it every day. So, like, yes, you give a lot of time into it, but you believe in it. I think that's just definitely helps. But it's a long game. Like, sometimes you have to drop everything and really give yourself over to the story. And other times you don't, and then you have to self-preserve and give yourself over to other things in your life, like yourself or, you know, whatever it is important to you. So I don't know if I have so much expertise on work-life balance than anybody else, but, you know.
Yeah, good luck. Who does? If you do, please come see me.
Yeah, I just got through a big podcasting project that I'd been working on for months, and there were definitely aspects of the work-life balance that were not functioning so great the entire time. But I love this work. I get to learn something new every day. I get to talk to fascinating people. I get to make work about things that I think are important. So it's that kind of stuff that when you're working late or thinking, man, it's been a long time since I made dinner, whoops. It's kind of like that keeps you going. As someone who's always felt like kind of a generalist, who's had pretty wide interests, I've been able to explore those interests through this work, and it's always interesting. I'm never bored, so.
Questions from the audience? I've got more, if not. Okay, Abby, grabbing a microphone.
Thank you. Jamie, you referenced sort of the thrill of the hunt on breaking news and being first to break something that maybe isn't being announced. But then you also talked about that the journal will often pick up stories that are just trending or, you know, just in the news that people are interested in. And I'm curious, when you do the latter, how do you think about putting the journal lens on those stories when it's a story everybody's covering?
We actually do try our hardest, and I would say, yes, like, money is a big way to think about it. I'm trying to think of, like, a good, like, celebrity kind of story we've done where we'll try to bring, like, more insights onto the financial aspect, or like through the hurricane, for example, recently in Florida, we've had amazing coverage on the insurance angles. Yeah. So we are always trying to do that, but you know, sometimes the story just isn't that financial, and it's just like a human story, and it's just a human interest story, and that's okay too. I think a lot of news organizations wrestle with like, how do we do something different and be like proprietary and do something special, when a lot of what people want to read is news, and you really like at your peril if you go. Like, you really have to convince people if you go off the news, because they have to read, people feel they have to read this news and be smart. And so if you're not going to be writing about news, you sort of need to convince people why.
Jamie, I'm curious, 20 years, like, do you have any that you would say, like, this one was a favorite? I believe you covered Enron. You've covered some massive stories. When you look back at the body of work, are there any particular stories that stand out?
I covered Bernie Madoff, and that was a really incredible story that I felt, I think I knew a lot of people affected, and that gave me like more of a determination on the story. So that was, I think, pretty gratifying. But I will say, like, the pandemic was a social tragedy in a lot of ways. Journalistically, it was incredibly challenging and dramatic. The whole global economy voluntarily shut down at once. And so, I mean, that's what we're in the business of, is change. When things change, and everything changed like within days, and then there was all these surprises. Like, we thought maybe the economy would go into a depression, but it actually went into a boom. And then, you know, then there was inflation, and I felt we were ahead on that. And then you see like, oh, there were shortages, but wait, now there's gluts. Like, so I just have found that to be a really, really fascinating last few years, I would say.
And Annie, I know you mentioned you started working on the podcast, and you all had reporters in Wuhan trying to get out, or journalists who were covering it, the story, trying to get out of Wuhan right as the pandemic sort of took root. Can you talk about that?
Sure, yeah. This was in the super early days, when this felt like a story that was happening somewhere else. And I remember having this conversation about whether we should cover this outbreak, and thinking, having this conversation of, well, is it gonna impact the global economy? I don't know, probably not. So we were looking at it early, and obviously didn't know what that would grow into. But because we had reporters there, really good reporters, who actually recorded things for us as they were getting out of Wuhan, before the city closed down, we had this dramatic tape. Great reporters who could tell us what it was like being there, as a city is about to go under quarantine, like on a scale that we've never seen before in modern times. That was dramatic tape, and it felt like we were kind of where the story was happening. And so that's definitely one of the episodes. I think we ended up doing two or three with those reporters. It definitely stands out in our coverage as a time when we were on the news early and really where things were happening, and able to bring that to our listeners in sound.
We have one now on another podcast series called Bad Bets, and I don't know how much of you guys have been following this company, Nikola, and its founder, Trevor Milton. It was one of these early electric vehicle companies, and this fellow, Trevor Milton, on Friday was convicted by a New York jury of criminal conviction. I think the basic claim was defrauding investors. I don't know if it was like wire mail fraud, but that was like the basic gist of the allegations. And we have a podcast going on now about him, and it's been really, really an incredible podcast. We did really, really, I thought, very, very good work on this at the time when the controversy around this fellow bubbled up, and now this podcast series is just like another example of how we could go deeper, tell it in a different way. I highly recommend it. It's not under the journal, it's under Bad Bets.
Okay, everyone mark that down, Bad Bets. Other questions from the audience? Yes.
Hi, Hi, thank you all for doing this. It's so nice to be back in person at events. It's been a wonderful conversation. Question for you. I was recently reading that there's 6 PR people or communicators to every 1 journalist, which is such a huge difference, right? So you guys must have 1,000 email pitches or things that have nothing to do with your beat. So I was just looking for maybe some tips for the stories that actually get through to you, whether you're like, actually, that's a cool trend, or we're going to look at that. Just any generic tips or things that really are your pet peeves. That's interesting, too. I was just talking to someone. They were like, if they spell my name wrong, I delete it. So any insights just to get an email? And if you think you have a really good story idea, what breaks through for both of you?
Okay, Jamie, I know you get lots of awful pitches. I want to hear all the stories.
I'm not a beat reporter anymore. I mean, I don't really read pitches. To be honest, maybe like individual beat reporters might read them more. I think for us, when we're different reporters have different approaches to public relations folks. Like some people just frankly want to just like get right around them and get right to the executives. Other people feel like, oh, this is an important relationship for me to have and work on that. I think really just having like mutual respect for what each person's doing is the best thing you can have. We don't expect PR people to like hand us exclusives or, I mean, if you want to, it's great. We're happy to take them if we're interested in them, but like we have our job to do, you guys have your job to do. And I think as long as everyone is just like, we're trying to practice no surprises journalism with you and let you know what we're going to publish before we do, and you don't have to comment or guide us, but like, just don't mislead us. Like, that's really important to us. Just be an honest broker with us. And I think the most effective times is if a beat reporter and a PR person like do have a relationship, then we can know if we call you and say we're going to publish this, but tell me if we're wrong, then we'll get the information we're hoping to get, which is like, we don't want to be wrong. We really don't. So we want to hear from you. That's like the main way that I think about working with public relations executives.
I would say that's been my experience, by the way, in working with your team. I've shared this with you. Those in the room who've worked with the journalist who covers us would say the same. Because you have such a high bar for the reporting, she pounds the facts before she calls us. And so it's not always exactly right, but usually, she's fairly close in certain areas. So appreciate that.
Good. I hope so.
How about on your side, Annie? Do you all get pitches, and how could we pitch the Journal podcast?
I do not get nearly as many pitches as I did in public radio. I worked on a science show, and I got any manner of very dubious science pitches. Fewer in this job. I think one that stands out. I got like an email a month for a time from this guy pitching his product, the Garlic Rocket, and every time this would land in my inbox, I was just like, what do you think we do here? And so I think if it's clear that they don't know the show, then I don't feel the need to know what they're pitching me. I think it's a mutual respect thing. Yeah.
Like if we know you and you come to us, then we're gonna like listen more because we feel like you're having something more to say than just to like be in an email blast. I mean, that's the Journal. I can't speak to other places. But
we have time for one last question. Yes.
Hi. So Dusty mentioned kind of the rise of new platforms and perhaps how that's driving consumption through different formats, text, video, audio. And as a traditionally print media, who's obviously now gotten much more into audio, how do you view the mix of different formats and maybe what that will look like over the next 2, 3, 5 years?
Do you want to start, being the digital person you are?
I can only speak to the podcast space, but we've seen it get so competitive that I think it's not necessarily a more is better situation, but the shows and the products that can differentiate themselves and build audience and have been in the game long enough to do those things are gonna be the ones that stand out. So I think like continuing to do excellent journalistic work, stuff like that cuts through the noise, and certainly us being affiliated with the Wall Street Journal and Spotify helps a lot with that. We've also seen a ton of consolidation. It helps to be affiliated with gigantic companies and institutions to cut through the noise. But I think, yeah, differentiating yourself and your product, and for us, we try to do that through the quality of our journalism and storytelling. I'm not sure that answered the question.
It's hard to say. I've personally been more of the belief that one isn't replacing the other. Like, again, I feel like the video and the podcast are like complementary and not in lieu of. So I don't know that it's going to be less, but I do feel like we're putting more money into those. Like, they're very costly to do, and I think it's important for us to be competitive there. I mean, I'm not the expert on this, but I think there's a lot of advertising there, and that's an important part of the puzzle. So those are definitely important. I mean, I think just last week we announced like we're doing a TikTok channel. So, I mean, it used to be like 20 years ago, like you had to like pick this up and read this. And now, you know, I still like to believe we're a brand that people want to know what we're saying every day, but we also have to go out to where people are getting their information and where people are looking and bring our work out.
Yeah, we're, I think, a very important introduction to a lot of people, especially to non-subscribers, to the work of the journal. Because on our show, they get the journalism for free, and they also hear from the journalists. And I think that's incredibly powerful to hear from the people doing the work, especially in this age of like media mistrust, to hear from the real human being who did the reporting and knows what they know, I think is a great way for people to first encounter the journal's work.
And so, Jamie, are you pushing your journalists to share the content on their social channels? Are you encouraging them to adopt and participate in some of these other forms of communication as you're trying to drive traffic to the site?
Oh, 100%. Like, if someone does a big story, like, we definitely want them to be on the journal, and we have, like, a What's News podcast in the morning, and, you know, sometimes people will do radio hits, but it's a balance. Like I always say, every reporter is sort of like president of their own company, and how much time are they spending like trying to get information and report versus how much time are they going on TV or like writing their story. It's just, there's only so many hours in a day, you know, and I think that's one of the challenges is you're spending a lot of time on reporting, you have to write your story, and then people are calling. It's like, oh, the CFO of Bed Bath & Beyond just, you know, a horrible thing happened. Like, can we get you on the phone? You know, it's, for reporters, it's a lot of just time management, but we want it all. It's just, how do we balance all the time?
This is fascinating. And as we're watching it all sort of evolve, you know, it's so interesting to understand what goes on behind the scenes. I just will close by saying, I feel like we're at this fascinating time in the industry, and these two women really are on the front lines of the stories that we're all talking about. And so it is just an absolute delight to get to host you this evening. Thank you for talking with us. I was supposed to meet Jamie for the first time, and she had to cancel because Elon Musk had floated this idea that he was going to purchase Twitter. And I was like, oh, yeah, I can understand why you might now have a conflict this morning. Let's definitely reschedule. So I guess one never knows what the two of you are up to.
That's one of the best parts of the job, you know? It's always exciting. It literally is exciting, like, every single day. So I feel really lucky. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
You've been listening to Women Heard, presented by New York Women in Communications. I'm your host, Julie Hockheiser-Ilkovich. Thank you to our incredible producer, Liz Roberts, and the amazing team that works on this podcast. Chelsea Orcutt, Chrisanne Grise, Mandy Carr, Alex Fetter, who wrote our original theme music, and all of the wonderful volunteers on the podcast committee. A special thanks to Donna Jean Plant and everyone at New York Wiki who supports us. For more information about New York Women in Communications, including how to join and all about upcoming events, go to nywiki.org. That's nywici.org. And please take a moment to rate and review our show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks for listening.